Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 322, recorded October 9th, 2011. Damn you, Siri. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. GoToAssist Express by Citrix puts IT professionals in position to do what they do best. Access, diagnose, and resolve. Try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToAssist.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 20% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT10. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/TWIT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID Audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Hello, everybody. We are going to talk about the week's news and what a week it has been. Joining me now from his home in Houston, Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle and the Tech Blog. It's good to see you, Dwight.
Hello,
Leo. Cron.com/tech.
I'm underdressed today, but it's appropriate.
I love it. The Bondi Blue original iMac. 1998 was the year. It was $1,299.
I used to have an eWorld t-shirt.
Oh,
remember
wow.
eWorld?
Yeah, I was a member.
I got it for reporting a bug in eWorld, and they sent it to me.
Wow.
And in front of it had the eWorld logo, and on the back of it had done in that kind of soft pastel style, an ant being squished by an anvil.
And what did that mean?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, you got it. You squashed a bug. Yeah.
Squashed a bug.
Yeah.
But, and this has on the back, think different.
I believe, though, that an ant is not a bug. It's a cephalopod. I don't know what it is.
That's the literal net.
I'm sorry. That's an insect, not a bug.
By the way, we are finally getting rain here. We've had this.
I heard. The drought is over.
And, we're getting like, I think we've had about 3.5 inches so far today. It's great.
Do you think it'll be enough to change the landscape?
No, it's going to take more than this. But you know what's funny is we have flood advisories.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know,
Anyway, great to have you, Dwight. And I'm glad you're wearing the T-shirt. That's the first product Steve Jobs introduced after his return to Apple in 1998.
That's right.
Also joining us, Mr. Mike Elgin, the king of Google Plus, back again, former editor at Computer World, and you still write for Computer World from time to time.
I write for Computer World and a bunch of other publications.
But you're really a web guy now.
Web guy, cover.
Love that.
All this stuff.
And we're really glad to have Mike back, because he's great. Also here, from Gadget.com, Ryan Block. Good to have you, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote some interesting things on Jobs' passing. I guess everybody here did. I didn't because I talk, not write. But I talked some interesting things. This was a week. Tuesday, Apple announces the iPhone 4S in a strangely somber event. I wasn't at the event. You were at the event.
I was there, yeah.
And we saw the video later, and that's when it hit me. I didn't know at the time. Did you feel like the Tim Cook and the others were a little bit down?
I heard people who were there say that they thought Tim Cook was a little nervous.
Maybe.
And I definitely heard people say after the fact that they thought that maybe he was a little depressed. I didn't really get that.
It was all in hindsight, I guess.
Here's what I think. I mean, maybe they knew that that Steve was about to pass, or that he had just passed, and we found out about it a couple days later. I don't really know. What I do know is that these guys are so heavily trained to do these keynotes that they've rehearsed it so many times,
right,
that when you get up there, your mind just goes blank.
You just and do it.
Yeah, you're just doing it. So I really actually don't think that there was probably a whole lot of latent emotion going
right
on there. And I think just generally, like, if you want to kind of get the Steve feel during one of these things, you got to tone it down a little bit.
You
have to be supremely...
Not bring it up, but tone
it down. Yes, tone it down. Just be supremely confident. I think that is actually what really separates, you know, a Steve note from many of these other tech keynotes where, you know, the random CEO of, you know, whichever company you'll have is, you know, gets out on stage and is super pumped and, you know, Steve Ballmer sweating. That is actually like the anti.
That shows a lack of command. No, I agree with you. In any performance, the great performers are relaxed.
Yeah.
They're present.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have an internal energy and centeredness, but they don't have a lot of external energy coming out of them. I agree with you. I think that's true of performance in general.
And if you watch that, I noticed that even in just that little clip, Tim Cook, you know, is holding his hands together like this, like Steve used to do. He makes the same kind of gestures, does the same kind of sagely head nod. That
they got a lot of media training, I'm sure.
I'm sure they do, and I'm sure you know that probably Jobs may have spent some time with him if there was time for him to. You know, to give them a little coaching.
They have a very rigorous program that they've adhered to for years about how these keynotes go, how you get trained to do a keynote when they have guests up from other companies. You know, they always have app demos now during these iPhone events. There's, you know, some stories that have come out about, you know, what exactly that looks like as a third party company doing a demo on Apple's stage. I mean, it is. To say it's rigorous is actually kind of reductive. I mean, it is just downright crazy from what people have reported.
Did you see the chair in the front row with the reserved sign on it?
I did not see that.
Yeah. It shows up in the video, of course. It's front row on the aisle where the executives sit. Obviously, a reserve for Steve Jobs, whether he'd be there or not. There was a story, and I don't know how true it was, that Jobs watched the keynote in his comfy chair, drinking his favorite apple juice and eating rice pudding. I don't know how true. We have no idea if that's true.
The author may have been drinking apple juice. but it could be true, and he smiled afterwards.
That's what they said, the family said that Steve Jobs passed away the next morning, so I'm gonna give that credence. Yeah. It did feel somber to me, and maybe again, it's hard to say. In hindsight, you were there, you were watching.
You know, I really didn't walk away thinking like, oh man, something bad happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's kind of easy to like kind of apply, you know, that.
Yeah, it's 2020 hindsight.
Right. It felt very low key, but it was meant to. Right?
Let's pretend that Steve Jobs did not pass away afterwards, which of course changes everything. Did it seem to you to be a disappointment, a letdown, the phone itself?
No. I mean, I think there were a couple of factors that came into play here. One, people forget that Apple has a cycle to their product launches.
Right.
And, you know, this kind of follows their cycle. For them, it's been every other year has been the big launch. You know, the original iPhone is a big launch, but it wasn't the iPhone that they knew was going to make them a worldwide success. It was their entrant. They had to get that product out the door.
Right.
It was the 3G that they really got behind. And that's the one where if you look at the sales charts over
the years. That's interesting.
That's when they hit the hockey stick. It was on the 3G. 3GS was an upgrade. They sold a gazillion of those things, but we all kind of acknowledged that was a minor upgrade. And then the 4, again, huge hit.
Right.
And then now the 4S. So, I mean,
So it's every other one.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like for the iPhone that this was some huge shock that it wasn't the quote-unquote 5 that I think had been kind of... And, you know, it really didn't help that some of the sites that had been starting these rumors, you know, as I guess they really started
kind of kicking off from April. We heard everything from there's going to be a new iPad, there's going to be two iPhones, there's going to be a Facebook application. I mean, there was a lot of hype around
this. What it really started... I actually went back and kind of looked around. It really started in April with one kind of big report about the iPhone 5, and that this year was going to be a huge year for the iPhone. Expect one of the bigger screen, and you know all the stuff, the teardrop shape. It all came from this one report, and it all
that's what happens, isn't it? It becomes you forget the source, you forget that it was a single.
Yeah, it
source.
Just becomes it becomes like rumor. This mysterious
it becomes canon.
Truth.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's very weird,
and we all believe it.
But I think this was a huge launch. Mainly
you
because
do, Mike.
I do, mainly because of Siri. And from a business perspective, which I think is mainly what Ryan is talking about, it's a slight continuation of the trajectory that started previously. But from a cultural perspective, I think I think 10 years from now, we're all going to be talking to our computers, all of our computers, to artificial intelligence agents like Star Trek. And I think that this will be traceable back to this moment.
This was the day that started.
Exactly. Now the Android
fans Android does it, but it doesn't talk back to you.
The Android didn't mainstream it. Okay, we remember the mainstreamers. We remember the Edisons and the Fords, people who didn't invent the light bulb with a car, but the mainstream.
That's what Steve Jobs is. I mean, he didn't invent the personal computer. He didn't invent the GUI. He didn't invent the MP3 player. He didn't invent the smartphone. Right. He didn't even invent the tablet.
So this is a new interface like the iPhone introduced the touch interface to the world. Again, right. There was already devices out there that had multi-touch interfaces. But
this will be the popularization.
Right, and in the future when you're using, 5 years, 10 years from now, our desktops are going to be like iPads with Siri. That's how we interact with our computers, with touch and voice, and it'll all be traceable back to this announcement and the 2007 iPhone announcement.
Well, you and I have been around a while, and of course we've been saying both, I'm sure, for years that the GUI, the user interface hasn't changed since 1984 when Apple came out with the mouse and Windows interface. Yeah. And everybody was, I think we were all saying, well, what would be the next big thing? And it would be speech. Yeah. It would be touch.
Just like Bill Gates said it would.
We knew it, but it happened finally. Yeah. Now, nobody here has tried, I mean, we've all tried Siri, but nobody's here tried the new Siri assistant.
Nope. Well, if I had tried it, I wouldn't be able to talk about it.
Ah.
So there's that. But, I mean,
that doesn't help us at all. So the thing is,
we'll know until Friday.
Well, how does it work in a noisy environment where the baby's crying on the beach? If I'm really running, can I actually say, Siri, schedule an appointment for noon? I'm sorry, you have an appointment for noon. Would you like to move it?
Yeah. What I'd like to know is why Siri doesn't work on the iPhone 4. I mean, the iPhone 4 has that audio DSP that allowed it to do the voice control. Siri sends a lot of that stuff, sends a lot of your voice to the cloud for processing, and then returns the
The bigger question is iPad. Too, because the iPad 2 has the same processor, same amount of RAM. So you could say, well, the iPhone 4 only has a single core processor. It needs more. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's all done off site, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, I think most of it, not all of it.
Yeah.
All right. So let's assume. Let's say Apple says, oh, well, you need a dual core processor. Well, the iPad has the same specs as the iPhone 4S.
I think.
So this is an artificial restriction.
I think it's more about the dictation that's done on the phone, because it also does dictation, and I think it maybe nuances technology in the dictation.
I think Ken from Chicago has it right. He says the Siri doesn't work on the iPhone 4, so you'll buy an iPhone 4S.
Right.
Of course.
Right. It's a business decision. But, the Apple's making a mistake, I think, in, they're pulling the iPhone app from Siri starting on October 15th.
It's already stopped working, I think, hasn't it?
No, it'll work till October 15th. You just can't download it. And it has this very strange message when you fire up the app now. Yeah. It says that it's going home on October 15th, almost like God is calling me home.
Has anybody actually played a Siri back? I mean, it's been around for a while. Yeah, so
I have.
Oh, I love it.
And it's a year and a half old version. Yeah, and it's cool. It's flawed, but very cool. And,
well, we've been wondering for a year and a half since Apple bought them. Where are they?
Well, Siri is a really interesting project because it begins with the Pentagon. Okay, and not a lot of people realize this, but the Pentagon a few years ago decided to create HAL 9000 for military applications. And so they brought together about 300 of the world's top scientists in all these different areas. It brings together all kinds of different areas about machine learning and all this kind of stuff. And the head of the project is a guy named Adam Chayer, I think is how you pronounce it, Chayer, something like that. And that guy now works for Apple.
Interesting.
And he spent all of his time. He was one of the leads at Siri as a startup. But these guys have been they've devoted their lives for the last 5 years or so to taking stuff from the Kalo project, C-A-L-O, which is the Pentagon DARPA project. And finding, cherry-picking items from that project that could be brought to consumers.
Hmm.
And that's what Siri is. It's a really kind of an inch, it has a really
I'm getting excited
legacy.
Now.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like you should buy the i4S not because of the dual core, not because of, what else is in the 4S? The better camera. Because of Siri.
World phone.
I'm already
Would you agree? Can you say that much?
I don't, honestly, for me, I get the long view why the voice is potentially
feature.
So transformative.
Yeah.
But, I'm thinking, am I going to buy this product? And if I am, what am I going to, what do I really need it for? I'm an iPhone 4 owner, so what do I need right now that I don't have, and I don't really feel like I need Siri yet. So I feel like it's going to be, you know, it's cool. It's an introduction. It's going to take a while to get there. I really want the camera. I really want the faster processor. Yeah. I wouldn't mind the ability to switch from AT&T to Verizon without potentially a ton of trouble at some point.
You know what? I was sitting there because so it's 12 midnight on Friday, and I woke up. I set the alarm. And I got online and I went to Apple, and as usual, the failure point was AT&T. You'd go right through the thing. I'm on upgrade, yes. And AT&T would spin and say, I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Right.
So I just on a whim, because I wanted the AT&T. I have an AT&T account. I do have a Verizon. I have an account with all of them. But so I went to the Verizon, and yes, that one worked. And then the thing that stopped me, they said, do you want this to be an international phone? And I said, yes, that'll cost you $30 extra a month. And I went, ho!
They didn't say that.
Hold on there. You mean I have to pay? Now, I found out since somebody said, well, I called Verizon on that one, and they said, but you could turn it off until you travel. So it's very much like the AT&T.
That's actually the plan. It's not the hardware, though.
When you sign up, and this is what stopped me, when you sign up, it said, do you want a SIM? Do you want this to be international? I said, yes. Well, choose your international plan, and the cheapest was $30 a month.
Right.
It looked like that. You'd have to pay that forever. And I said, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and you don't need to.
You don't need to.
That is correct. I went with Veronica to France last December, and I just activated on my AT&T plan. I activated international data for a month, and then I turned it off.
Yeah, that's what I did.
No big deal.
Do not forget about it, by the way, because you'll be $200 a month for the next 5 months, which is what happened to me.
Yeah.
Are you going to France again this year? No, going to pass on that one. We actually will be in France for Le Web this year. We're going to do Twit in France. So you can watch the video. It'll be warmer. Oh, my God, it snowed. It was cold. So let me we're going to take a break. I agree with you. I think Siri is going to be very interesting, Mike. It might be the beginning of this Talk to the Computer Talks Back. But I also think that there's all sorts of issues that until everybody's talking to their phone, you don't really appreciate. I'd use the Android stuff all the time.
Right.
You know, send texts to Mike. You will see a Twit. My son, sitting in the car, every time I do that, goes, he messes with me. And I have a feeling this is the future.
Yes.
Is that
future
people,
of parenting.
Of everything. Is that people look, it's bad enough people talk on the cell phone. Yeah. There's going to be signs that say, do not talk to your computer while you're in the shop.
Right.
Well, see, this this gets to why I'm biased in favor of this type of technology, not just Siri, but about all the coming age of artificial intelligence, because it solves all the problems that I personally have, because I always run with this thing. I do trail running, and it's like
that guy.
While I'm running, I'm trying to while I don't have my glasses on, and I use the alarm 5-10 times a day. For cooking, for taking a nap, for getting up. And you can just say, waking up for 30 minutes, whatever it is.
I love that. Set alarm for 30 minutes or set timer
for
5 minutes.
Wake me
I
up
love
or,
that.
You know, annoying me in 30 minutes.
In natural language.
Yeah. But, the iPhone 4 does have some of this capability now. Yeah. It has the voice control feature that not very many people used. I mean, I don't know if this will actually work. Maybe I'll see.
Somebody in our chat room said this is FaceTime, too. You know, it's just another cool thing.
Call Veronica Belmont Mobile.
See, I'm talking. It's going to ruin that. 34, dog, right. Hello.
I know. It's totally going crazy.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, no match found.
No match found. 34, dog.
I wanted to call Veronica.
Get ready. Get ready, because that's what's going to happen. Let me show you. This is the video, actually, a great mashup of the Siri ad with the guy running, talking to his phone, except his phone is not quite the phone he thought it would be.
Read me the message.
New message from K. Bad news. Combustible lemons failed. Can you meet us at 10?
Reply, definitely. I'll see you there. Play my running mix.
Oh, joy.
What's the traffic like around here?
The traffic will be slow and meaningless. Just like your sad little life.
Text my wife. I'm going to be 30 minutes late.
She won't mind. She doesn't really love you anyway.
Is it going to be chilly in San Francisco this weekend?
Not too cold. Your few extra pounds should be suitable insulation for two people warm.
What about Napa Valley?
I hear it's beautiful there. Unlike you.
How many cups are in 12 ounces?
Let me think. Do you really need to make those extra cupcakes?
Set my timer for 30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes and counting. Until I end your sad attempt at a life.
See, I would pay money for this. I want GLaDOS in my phone.
Still on for dinner tonight. Extent is it going to be extensible? Perhaps you should have a snack. Maybe some Joker with it.
Well, you know, you can get TomTom. Of course, lets you. We'll let people watch Stewie that.
They haven't announced an API for this yet. So maybe next year.
That would be
iOS 5 is kind of it's locked down now. So if there is an API, we probably won't see it for a little while.
I have GLaDOS on my TomTom. And it tells you to turn left when you're supposed to turn right.
I use Dial To Do.
Love Dial To Do.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Love
To Do reminders, to do exactly what Siri does. And one time, my favorite story on that, which is would have been great material for this bit, was that I wanted to do a reminder. I said reminder, and it replied with send a message. And I said something like, no, something like that. And then it
sent that message.
Interpreted that as send a message to my wife.
Oh, no.
And then I did an expletive, and off it went. An email with an F word to my wife. And
get ready. This, if you thought autocorrect was bad.
It's going to be fun.
Auto Siri is going to be much, much worse.
All right, I'm grabbing the domain now.
Damn you, Siri. Damn you, Siri. Damn you. We're going to take a break, come back with more. We've got a great panel. We've got Ryan Block from GDGT.com, Mike Elgin from, I want to say from Google Plus.
Yeah.
Because don't go to Elgin.com.
That's was.
Go to Google Plus, baby. And, of course, Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle. More to come in just a bit. In fact, we will start to talk about Steve Jobs. We kind of deferred that sad stuff for the second break. But I actually have, they've published the preface to Walter Isaacson's biography, which comes out in a couple of months, and I'll read a little bit of it from you, for you. It's very touching. That's coming up in just a bit. But first, a little bit from Citrix and Go to Assist Express. When we were doing the screensavers, we tried out a prototype for this product called Expert City. And the idea was you could get into people's computers and fix them remotely. Well, they've come a long way, baby. Go to Assist Express is fantastic. It's everything I had hoped for and more. It's fast. It's easy to use. It's cross-platform, Mac or PC. You could do unattended support, so you don't have to wait till your supportee is there. It's really easy for the... I use it with my mom. It's so easy. I sent her a link. She clicked it. 30 seconds later, you know, you say, okay, when it says allow, click allow. That's the Java pop-up. And that's it. You're now in there fixing it. You can chat with her. She can see you working. It's really remarkable. You get support done the way your client wants it, fast and right the first time. Go to Assist Express. Very affordable. Monthly fee means you can assist as many people as you have time for without paying extra for it. They've got a nice feature that allows you to do 8 sessions at once. Why would you want to do that? Well, let's say you run a scan on one. You don't have to wait. You can just go to the next one, run an install on that one, go to the next one. You can continue to move along. It's great if you can drag and drop files from your computer to there. So if you've got a hot fix, for instance, from Microsoft, just drag it right over, or malware bytes or whatever. It also will give you an assay of what operating system exactly, down to the point number, what security software, everything running in the background. Look, I can go on and on, but the best thing to do is go to the website, gotoassist.com, GOTO, assist.com/twit. And you could try it for free for 30 days. It is absolutely the IT support tool. And if you do support, whether it's as an IT person, a software support person, or just the geek around the house, they've got day passes for people who don't do it every day. It's fantastic. Integrated live chat, too. GoToAssist.com/twit. We thank them for their support. This is from canoe.ca, Canoe Technology. Special to QMI Agency. This is the forward from Inside Jobs. Is that the name of it, Inside Jobs?
No, I thought it was just called Steve Jobs.
It's just called Steve
Well,
Jobs.
I wonder. Yeah. I hope this is not a fake. Oh, there it is, Steve Jobs. Maybe this is what they titled the article. All right. There's the cover.
I think it was originally called, like, iJobs or something.
Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs. That's plenty. Steve. That's good.
It's perfect because it's about Steve Jobs.
That same image that Apple used on their website when Steve passed away, which is a very dramatic image. Isaacson was handpicked by Jobs to write this book. Former managing editor of Time magazine. He's the chief executive at Aspen Institute. He's written a number of very good books. But I want to scroll down. I won't read you the whole thing, but let me read you the last couple of paragraphs from this, obviously written after Steve passed away. He says, a few weeks ago, I visited Jobs for the last time in his Palo Alto home. He had moved to a downstairs bedroom because he was too weak to go up and downstairs, and he was curled up in some pain, but his mind was still sharp and his humor vibrant. We talked about his childhood, and he gave me some pictures of his father and family to use in my biography. As a writer, I was used to being detached, but I was hit by a wave of sadness as I tried to say goodbye. In order to mask my emotion, I asked the one question that was still puzzling me. Why had he been so eager during close to 50 interviews and conversations over the course of 2 years to open up so much for a book when he was usually so private? I wanted my kids to know me, he said. I wasn't always there for them, and I wanted them to know why and to understand what I did. Wow. I'm looking forward to this book. It goes on sale October 24th. Of course, pre-orders on Amazon are through the roof. I hope it will not be a hagiography. I hope it will be an honest portrayal because, as we know, Steve Jobs was a complex person. He wasn't always good. He wasn't always kind. Yeah. He was always demanding. He was a perfectionist. What did you think, Mike, when you heard the news?
Well, you know, it's something that you'd been thinking about for a while because he's been sick and so on. And
it was not unexpected.
No, not unexpected. The timing, you know, could have been any time. And, you know, I had many thoughts, I'm sure we all did, that, you know, one of these days it's just this news is going to come out. And what's right. that going to be like? And it was, you know, kind of hard to imagine. You know, I thought one of the most interesting things about Jobs as a person, as an icon and all that stuff is... And one of the reasons I'm looking forward to this book, because really we don't know that much about Steve Jobs. There are some stories that have been told and retold again and again and again, but they're little fragments of his life. We don't really have what was in between all of those famous moments.
Right.
And I'm hoping the book will finally, for the first time, have those things out there. But this is a guy who's a pure product of Silicon Valley. You know, people nowadays come from all over the world to go to Silicon Valley.
No, he was born there.
He was born in San Francisco. Yeah. He was raised in Mountain View. If you look at Silicon Valley on Google Maps and try to find the center of Silicon Valley, it's like his house. I mean, he was born yeah. right in the middle of it. And yeah. this is, and it's not just the place, but the time. He was mm-hmm. raised in a time in the 60s and 70s, growing up, running around the valley. This is before they had play dates and all that stuff. Kids just ran free and did whatever they want. What did he want to do? He went dumpster diving at the local, you know.
This is back in the day when there was actually silicon in Silicon Valley.
Exactly. Well, the origin of silicon in Silicon Valley took place about a mile from his house, actually.
The HP garage.
Shakely, I think it was. Then that gave root to Intel and all these other companies. Yeah. I'm mispronouncing the name, but anyway, it all happened right there. And he, you know, when teenagers were idolizing pop stars and Elvis and the Beatles and all that stuff, he idolized Hewlett and Packard,
yep.
and apparently Land.
Edwin Land. Yeah, there's. I don't know if this is true. There's yeah. a little articles going around that was his true idol. I don't know if that's true.
But in addition to the technology influences, and this is something you rarely hear people talking about, he was also influenced by other aspects of the Bay Area, one of them being a sense of optimism about the future that existed in California
yeah.
at that time, which I remember personally. I grew up in Southern California, and it was just an overwhelming sense of optimism. Nowadays, all these emo kids are walking around.
That, but that's really true. I was working in San Jose in radio in the late 70s, and there was this sense... This excitement. You had Atari, you had Apple, yeah. IBM was there. It was really happening there.
Yeah. yeah, and in addition to that, this sort of the hippie thing from San Francisco and Berkeley, the radicalism mm-hmm. of Berkeley and Oakland, mm-hmm. all this stuff was in the air, and he took all that in and integrated into his total personality. And so you can't really understand Jobs without understanding all of that and the degree to which he really was a pure product of Silicon Valley.
I think that's a very good point. Yeah, I think you're right. Can Apple survive the loss of Steve Jobs, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think they already have, in a sense. I mean,
short term, of course. Short term, I mean, Steve set the tone and set the. I'm sure the product line for the next few years is already set.
Yes.
But what about
so
after that?
within the consumer electronics industry? You're assuming that Steve was, you know, very personally involved up, you know, until. The end or close to the end, you'll see his hand in products for the next 2 years.
Right.
It goes out that far.
Right.
But I think, you know, the important things were trying to instill the way that he thinks and works and, you know, the culture that I think he wanted Apple to become. When he first left earlier this year, I wrote, you know, a piece then, and I've heard the sentiment that I was kind of basing it all around. I called the piece "Living in Steve's House," and the sentiment was basically he built this house, and you know, it's not Scully's house anymore.
That's
right?
For
it's
sure.
Steve's house, yeah. And everyone who you know comes into Steve's house is going to be thinking about him and, you know, what would Steve do?
Can't that be a negative, though? I mean, Paul Theroux said that that's what happened to Microsoft. They kept saying, what would Bill do? What would Bill do? And nothing evolved. Couldn't that be a downside to this?
Well, I mean, I think that the culture is different and Bill is not Steve.
Well, that's true.
So, I mean, that may be the case, but I wouldn't worry about it too much because, you know, I think part of Steve...
If you could come up with the right answer to what would Steve do, I mean...
Right, exactly. I think that's what it is.
That's not easy, right?
No.
You look at Disney, you know, Guy Kawasaki, heard him on CNBC saying, I was just at Disneyland. Obviously, Disney survived Walt Disney with its image intact. In fact, it's not true. Disney almost went under after Disney died. They went through a very bad period. It wasn't until Iger came along that really they were able to turn themselves into a very different company. You know, Disneyland may preserve Walt's vision, but that's about it.
Yeah.
I don't see anybody in the current executive suite that has anywhere near Steve's vision or creativity or even
taste. You know,
taste.
I think that's unfair because we just don't know the executives there. We've never gotten a chance to know them because it's always been the Steve show.
Tim Cook is a great logistics guy. That's why he's
there. Genuinely, I don't know that Tim does not have his vision. I can't say that confidently.
We do know that he doesn't have his impact.
Go ahead, Dwight.
His influence over people in the company.
Go ahead, Dwight.
I think Tim Cook... You know, there was a story that came out shortly after Tim Cook was named CEO about him dispatching a worker to China who, you know, to begin some of the work that was done there early on with establishing the factories there. And it was a very Steve Jobs-like statement. You know, he said to the guy, okay, we need to do this. And he spoke to someone else, then he turned and he looked to the guy and says, why are you still sitting here? And that's very Steve Jobs-like.
Yeah.
And I think that Tim Cook has kind of the profiles that you saw of him after he was named. He has kind of the spine of steel, this gentlemanly Alabama nature to him, but very forceful and in a quiet way. And I think if you combine that, we forget about Johnny Ive, who is the design and usability. You know, he is the... probably, you know, one side of Steve's brain and Tim Cook is the other. And I think what Apple should hope for is that those two guys mind meld if they haven't already.
I think
those two are it.
Jobs surrounded himself with great people. He did on the Macintosh team. I mean, he was clearly very good at that. But I think in every respect, he was the leader that they needed to get the very best out of themselves.
Yeah.
And I agree, we don't know Ryan because we haven't seen these guys. But I have to think that Jobs is a truly unique individual.
Absolutely.
And it's highly unlikely that there's another Steve Jobs lurking there.
Sure.
You know, let me put it this way. Steve Jobs would have never worked for Steve Jobs. If there's a man with Steve Jobs drive. That's right. If there's a man with Steve Jobs drive in that number two position, what the hell's he doing there? Because that's not the kind of person that works for a Steve Jobs. So I think there's almost the nature of the environment is that when you have a Steve Jobs, the people who are surrounding him are not.
The only point that I'm trying to make is that, well, there's a couple. One, Apple doesn't necessarily need Steve Jobs at this point to go on and thrive. I mean, okay.
There may be enough momentum there to continue.
Let's say that, you know, Apple now becomes 80% as good as it was with Steve Jobs at the height in the past 10 years, that's still going to make it 50% better than number two.
That's a good point.
You know, the other supposition here is that, like, you need to find a replacement. Nobody's going to replace anybody. If Johnny Ive went back to England tomorrow, you couldn't replace Johnny Ive. But you move forward. And I think, you know, Steve made it his personal goal to ensure, I mean, he knew he was going. He knew he was on his way out, and he made it his personal goal to ensure that his legacy would live on. I mean, that's what you want as a founder. Like, you care about the legacy of your company.
That's what you hope for. I just wonder how easy that is to do. You know, I keep hearing
not
the phrase,
easy at all.
He injected his DNA and so forth, and certainly, I'm sure he shared with all these guys. There's a story somebody told me, an Apple employee told me that in his last days on campus, Steve took a walk with Tim Cook and pointed and made sure that everybody saw him walking the campus, going like this, and then that, and I want you to do that, and we're going to be doing that, almost to say, I am passing along the plan to Tim to implement. And that's the kind of thing, you're right, a founder wants to do. But I think it's so hard to really continue.
Look at
on.
The stories that people are telling about Steve Jobs. Here's just one typical story. Originally, the front of the original iPhone was supposed to be plastic, a very high-grade, high-tech form of plastic. And everybody said it had to be plastic. It made sense from a manufacturing point of view, from a durability point of view, from a cost. Everybody said it had to be plastic, and it was going to be plastic.
Right.
And at the very last minute, Steve Jobs says, you know what? I can't live with plastic. It has to be glass. And the only reason, it's not that Steve Jobs had that opinion, but because he was Steve Jobs, that opinion is the reason there's glass on the iPhone. And so who's going to do that? Right. And who's going to do all the? Who's going to say move it over 2 pixels?
Who even has
the wrong color of yellow?
Who even has the power to do so?
Right. Even if there was a clone of him with a different name, they don't have the power and influence and adulation of the company. But to Ryan's, that's one perspective. To Ryan's point, and just to build on what he was saying, I think that when he came back, what he learned next was how to be a kick-ass business leader. And when he came back, he cleaned house. It was the Godfather. He replaced the board. He replaced the executives.
And rightly so.
He didn't hesitate to just put the right people in place.
Today, all the family's business will be done.
Exactly. And so, you know, the Apple of today is you know, it's everybody in that company is there because Steve Jobs wanted them there.
You bet. I'm not sure I'd hold Apple stock right now. That's all I can say. And in fact, the stock market doesn't seem to feel that way either. I think they're down quite a bit right now.
Well, they were in the short term. I mean, they'll be back. They'll be fine. Like I said, you know, they've got a couple of years before they really need to start proving that the transition of vision has occurred.
Sure.
And it is that vision, I think.
I'm glad you're so bullish. I think that's great, and I hope that's right.
I try to take a long-term view of these things. I mean, you know, if this is not the Apple of the 80s where, you know, there was a huge void in vision.
Absolutely.
And it was just coming from all sides.
Absolutely.
I think this is a dramatically different and much more organized and far more, you know, personalized to Steve Jobs's vision and way of doing things and way of thinking. I just, you know, if there is going to be something that really falls apart, I don't even think we're going to see it immediately. I think it's going to take a long time for us to get there.
There's one word that explains why you should hang on to your Apple stock, and that word is China. Apple has barely begun its takeover of the Chinese consumer electronics market, and they love Apple stuff in China. Love it. So much that they make their own. And not to mention
they have their own Apple stores.
Exactly. So, but you know, if you look at, you know, they're not on China Mobile yet officially, and yet the iPhone is the number one phone. Unauthorized iPhones are the dominant phone on China. Wait till that, you know, that's a done deal, and the iPads. And I mean, it's really, you know, China is going to be half the global market, and it hasn't really
started.
That's
a very interesting point. And I have to say, I think if there is a next Steve Jobs, he will probably, or she will probably, come from China, because the culture there does support that kind of, you know, capitalism and innovation. And I think we might be surprised at who the next Steve Jobs is.
You know, the story that you told about the glass is really interesting to me. And, you know, as you were telling the story, and I'd heard it before, you know, it just kind of made me think, well, what if the iPhone had come out and it didn't have glass, you know? Still would have been a huge success. I mean, like, yes, it would not have been the iPhone exactly as we know today. And yes, like, the glass is clearly preferable.
Yeah.
I mean, I would not want an iPhone without the glass at this point.
But the iPhone is the result of 100 of those such decisions.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So, who knows? I mean, it's, you know, and I think that's how we're going to see changes if we do see changes. There'll be little things.
Yeah, it'll be subtle.
There'll be little products will come out and say, people will say, people like me will say, Steve Jobs.
Steve would never have done that. Yeah.
I think a big part of it, though, and this is kind of behind the scenes magic, is just that Apple at the size and the scale and the influence that it has now can actually make those decisions almost willy-nilly and not have to worry too much about it. I mean, if Samsung were in that position, maybe not Samsung, they're actually really, really big, but you know, take you know, a couple of steps down. If it was Motorola was in that position, they might not have the ability to make that decision because they don't have the clout, the resources necessary with manufacturers and materials makers. They don't have the scale to be able to pull something like that off. Whereas Apple actually, yes, I think we can agree that maybe there isn't an individual who's going to step in and make that decision yet. Maybe it's Ive, maybe it's Cook.
But maybe it's Scott Forstall.
Whoever it is, if somebody does make that decision, we know that they can execute.
Right.
And that's not something that every consumer electronics manufacturer can say.
That's a very good point, yeah.
They just have a scale where they can do whatever they want now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a juggernaut.
They're limited only by their imagination.
They have a production juggernaut. A very good point. That's limited only by its imagination. Yeah. I completely agree with you.
Well, and Mike, one of the things, you know, about you're saying that people like me will point that out, I think people are going to be lying in wait for the Jobs products, and they'll be hypercritical, and they'll find the two pixels, and they'll say, see, Steve is gone. But, you know, the average person may not necessarily see it that way. I agree that Apple is really good in the long term. I think they have about five years to run on the momentum of Steve Jobs, and I think after 5 years will be the real test. But Apple has been through a test, and that's also burned into their DNA, kind of that failure from the 80s. And you have to remember that when Steve left, when he was kicked out, he already had lost control. It wasn't Steve Jobs' Apple anymore. You know, the Macintosh project was something he had to do because Apple had become too bureaucratic and he had to sneak off to do it.
Right.
And so it long ago had become not Steve's company. And that has changed dramatically. I think they've got about 5 years, and then I think we'll see the real test.
You know, Dwight, you actually make a really good point that I'd like to riff on, which is if you see anybody at like a big publication or anything like that say, oh, Jobs would never have allowed this within the next 12 months, you know they're full of it. They don't know what they're talking about.
Let's write that down. And
you can quote me on this because it's, you know.
I can almost guarantee you somebody at this table will say that in the next 12 months during a Mac break. It may be me and it may not be. But
Siri, remind me in 12 months.
The pipeline, I think, is just, it's too, the pipeline is too tight for the next, you know, 18 months. Maybe 24 on the high side. I mean, you know, the next 3-4 products that we see come out, you know, in 2012, they're going to have Steve's fingerprints all over it. If you see any kind of failure with iCloud, if iOS 5 is not as great as people want it to be, or if, you know, there's like really bad production problems with the iPhone 4S that we don't yet know about because it's not yet out, there's some kind of hardware failure, whatever. If you see anybody say, oh, it's because Steve is gone, they are just totally full of it.
Bozos. Because all those things, by the way, have happened under Steve's watch in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have an instant indicator.
Mobile Me. I mean, the white iPhone, we've seen it, you know, even with Steve at the helm.
iTunes for Windows.
iTunes for Windows. that's still a thorn in my side. I want to talk about Samsung, because Samsung did something kind of interesting. Some say classy, some say cynical. We'll talk about it in just a bit. Great panel. Dwight Silver. I almost called you Dwight Schrute. Dwight Schrute from the Houston.
Oh, no.
From the Houston Chronicle. How's the beet farm going? Mike Elgin from Elgin.com, Computer World, and, of course, most importantly, Google Plus. How is the Google Plus? It's not dead, is it?
Oh, no.
All right. Because I've been seeing some articles saying Google Plus is dead.
No.
Good.
It's awesome.
By the way, while we have been doing this show, I have probably had about 30 to 40 people, according to the email notifications I'm getting, follow me in the circles on Google Plus, probably because of Mike's reference to it, but it's been like a flood since the show started.
They changed their notifications now. They're extended circles only. Is that what it is?
You can go in and it's more granular and all this kind of stuff.
I like it.
It's nice. Yeah.
I wasn't really crazy about the fact that I was getting notifications. Because, of course, we have a lot of followers, so that means we were getting a lot of noise in our notifications. Yeah. But I think this is better, frankly. Yeah. But anyway, that's another story for next segment. Right now, I want to tell you about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. If your website has gone down in the last few months, you maybe should look at Squarespace.com. I'm going to say something very strange, bold, and risky. Squarespace sites never go down. I've never seen a Squarespace site be crashed.
You want to test this?
Go ahead, test it.
No, give us a site to go to.
Go to our Inside Twit blog, inside.twit.tv.
All right, the fire hose.
Everybody go there right now. Inside, and I'm going to wait 30 seconds, give you a chance to go there, and then I'll see if it loads. How about that for bold? Here's why. Squarespace is hosting plus software, right? But it's all tightly integrated. They use a very sophisticated. You don't have to do it, too. You're all going to go there?
Yeah. We're doing this thing now.
Oh, God.
Leo makes bold claims.
That's a bold claim. They have very sophisticated hosting that... I didn't mean to load that yet. I forgot. Now, the new Google, is you type the first few letters, it loads the page, like, instantly. The new Chrome, have you seen that? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, I won't type anything for a second. Their Java hosting allows them to throw more bandwidth behind a site very easily, very quickly. It's really remarkable. Squarespace.com, you can try it. This is the other thing that's remarkable. They make it so easy to try it, and that shows a company that's very confident. If you go to Squarespace.com, click the green Try It Free button, and all you have to do is come up with a name for your site. That's usually the hardest part. A password. Give them your email address. And you're done. You've made a site. You can use all the tools. You've got 2 weeks to really play with it. And if you like it, then go back to Squarespace and sign up. I mean, it's really a great system. Great templates. They've got their iOS and Android apps now, so you can post and moderate from your mobile device. They've got stats just to die for, very simple plugins for all the social media integration. It just is easy. Oh, and you can import and export from all the major APIs, movable type, WordPress, TypePad, and Blogger. So you're never stuck, but you can always get that site moved in. All right, let's try it. Let's just see. I'm going to go right now, watch inside twit.tv.
It's loading just fine for me.
Is it loading? Well,
yeah, loads.
What happened? The Twit Army, you guys have let me down. I guess you can't kill a Squarespace site. It's a little bit slow. I have to say it's a little bit slower. That's YouTube not loading right there. You killed YouTube. You can't kill Squarespace. Look at that. The YouTube video won't load because you're all trying to load it. But Squarespace loaded right away. We love it. I know you will too. Squarespace.com. If you decide to sign up, use the offer code TWIT. They'll take 20% off. What the hell am I doing? Is that a dog?
I think that's Ozzy.
Okay, Squarespace. I'm trying to wear my dog. You know, you can do that with a cat. It doesn't work with a dog. Just word of advice. Don't try it. Squarespace.com. If you decide you want to sign up for a Squarespace account, make sure you use the offer code TWIT10. You see it right at the bottom of the screen. TWIT10. And you will get, they've upped it, 20% off for the first 6 months of your account. That is a great deal. The secret behind exceptional websites, you just can't crash it. Let me tell you something. We can crash any site by doing this live with the Twit Army. These guys can kill any site. We could not kill the site. We might have killed Drupal. We cannot kill inside.twit.tv. There you go. Squarespace.com. See, I got some guts. I got some nerve. I believe in our products. We got great sponsors here. So Samsung, love this story. Go ahead.
Wait, before we move on, yes. I did want to say just one other quick thing about.
Please, I don't want to rush us because this is a huge topic.
You know, I mean, we've talked a lot about Apple, and I have mixed feelings about like doing any media about, you know, Steve's passing. It just feels kind
of, you know, what
strange.
We did, and this didn't feel strange at all when it happened. Of course, we immediately went into kind of that live coverage. We did it. I stayed here with a bunch of people till 8, and then Eric Lanigan took over and took calls till midnight. And what I felt like, it was almost a wake. It was when something like this happens to our community, and he really was a part of our community, there's such grief that it's just valuable to just talk it out. Yeah. So we weren't trying to analyze it. We weren't trying to say what happens
I
next.
Know.
We were just talking about our feelings, and that was great.
So There's a swear in this tweet, but I want to pull up a tweet if we could.
Sure.
It's got a bad word in it.
That's okay. Brace yourself,
it's kids. It's from Anil Dash. So it's Anil's latest.
Is he Anil Dash on Twitter? Anil, of course, was for a long time with Six Apart. I think he left, didn't he?
Yeah,
where is he now?
He did. He's working on a government project now called something Labs. I can't.
Oh, remember. Expert Labs. That's right. He brought Gina in, of course.
Yeah. So that top one.
The effed up thing is that every other Fortune 500 CEO thinks people will leave flowers and tributes to their memory after they die too, and that's really true. If you go to any Apple store, there are Post-it notes on the window. There are bit apples. There are candles. This is like when Michael Jackson passed. Mm-hmm. This is our... Om Malik said this. In fact, we asked Om to be on the show, and he said it was too personal for him to talk about. But Om said he's our Elvis. And in a way, I think he is.
Or our John Lennon.
It reminded me very much of December 8th.
More closer to John Lennon.
Yeah, it really reminded... Now, John Lennon was killed in violence suddenly, unexpectedly, but it did feel very similar.
Well, see, I think he's our Elvis and our John Lennon, because if he's our Elvis, then who is our John Lennon? I mean, he's the only person in his class of adulation, really.
And I can't think of a single business leader that anybody would feel this way about.
So, you know, I was thinking a lot about this. Why people feel this way? Why so many people who'd never met him feel this way? And I think there are a lot of reasons. I personally consider myself very fortunate to have crossed paths with him on a number of occasions.
Did you get to interview him much? Or
I've never gotten to interview him. Few people
He was anti-press. It was very difficult. Walt Mossberg looks like the only, and David Pogue, the only guy.
I don't think Pogue has ever actually...
No, he has, yes. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. People feel the sense of connection with Steve, I think, maybe through the keynotes. But I think it actually came most from the products. And I was thinking about why this is. And, you know, part of it is Steve's goal with every product that he made was to create something that I think that he felt people could connect to. And that was intuitive.
And yet he didn't do focus groups. He didn't ask people. He said you should never ask a consumer what they want. Mm-hmm. Because they'll tell you they want what they've got now, only better, faster, cheaper.
I love Kawasaki's comment.
Wasn't that great?
That an Apple focus group is the left side of Steve Jobs' brain talking to the right side.
You know, and I think what we wound up with in the end was you know, a series of products that some of us have had for, you know, decades, depending on how far back you go with using Macs, that, you know, in the end... It wasn't just that the products worked well and made sense and were intuitive in ways that other products weren't. And it wasn't even that they were products that we were able to forge emotional bonds with, that I think that we, you know, before the iPhone, I don't think people had very many emotional bonds with their cell phones, for example.
Right.
This is something that very early on in the early days of Engadget, like 2004, it's really what drew me to doing a site just about consumer electronics is the emotional bond that you form with a piece of hardware sometimes.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
But it wasn't those things to me. What it was, I think, was that because these products made sense and because these products were usable, they made you feel like somebody understood you.
Right.
That Steve understood you.
Right.
And I think that might be a big part of the reason why people felt such an emotional connection with him as an individual.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. One of the stories I wanted to point out in this shows how emotional people in Silicon Valley got as a result of Steve's death. Brian Lamb, who was the editor at Gizmodo when the iPhone 4 prototype incident happened, wrote this remarkable apology, essentially, for the way he behaved. And from reading it, and maybe Ryan knows a little bit more about this than I do, but it reads almost as though one of the reasons that Brian left was because of was the result of the iPhone 4 incident and the way they handled it.
He felt
and
bad.
He felt really bad. And yeah.
He called himself an a-hole.
I can't speak for Brian. I mean, I think he would have to speak to that. He's one of my dear friends, and I had a lot of conversations with him at the time when this was happening, and everything he describes in the piece on the Wirecutter is exactly how I remember it going down behind the scenes. Of course, I've never been able to talk about it. I mean, he can talk about it freely. I think that there are definitely some misgivings about the way that that Gawker Media as a company wanted to handle that story, and I think maybe there were some differences between how the editorial staff wanted to treat it and how, you know, the people who run Gawker wanted to treat it. But all, you know, all that stuff is kind of, I think at the end you see that Steve maybe thought it was water under the bridge, and I think that's kind of the important part is, you know, that you got to, at least Brian got to, you know, bury the hatchet a little bit.
I love that he talks about getting a call from Steve Jobs when they have the iPhone 4 prototype. The call says, goes, "Hi, this is Steve. I really want my phone back." The fact that he called is very interesting. He says he wasn't demanding. He was asking, and he was charming, and he was funny. "I was half naked just getting back from surfing, but I managed to keep my stuff together. I appreciate you had your fun with our phone, and I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the sales guy who lost it, but we need the phone back because we can't let it fall into the wrong hands." I thought, maybe it's already in the wrong hands. He continued, "There are two ways we can do this. I can send someone to pick up the phone." Brian says, "I don't have it, but you know someone who does. Or we could send someone with legal papers, and I don't want to do that." He was giving us the easy way out. And before he hung up, this is what I love. He said, "By the way, what do you think of it?" And that is, yeah. I think that says it right there. I think we often see him as a calculating machine, as a person who was calculating every moment. But I think he genuinely loved these products he was creating. Yeah. He's saying, "Brian, so what'd you think? You like it?" I mean, that is a guy who really wants to know.
Leo, I think that is very calculating. I mean, I think he was charming. I think he was – I think what he wanted to do was probably scream at him. But he knew that this was a journalist, and this is how Steve Jobs and other people in that position treat journalists. He was buttering him up.
I've never heard of Steve buttering up a journalist, to be honest.
He would do it in a – I mean, look at
– Well, you know, this is the kind of lore that we're going to be able to debate for generations.
I know. I love it. He is already becoming mythology, isn't he?
Oh, he was mythology while still alive.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could quiet a room mention that he might be coming. I mean, there is nobody else.
And I think both are true. I think he was a very calculating – chess player, and I think he was also a very nice guy.
Yes, I think you're right.
He could be a nice guy when it suited him. I think, you know.
He was nice to Jennifer. He was nice to my wife when there was absolutely nothing to gain by being nice to my wife. He was just genuine and nice, and I've heard of him being nice to people where there was nothing to gain.
Did you guys read the Stephen Levy obituary that he wrote on Wired?
I think I did. Yeah. Tell me what
that one had a really interesting. So Steven's, you know, been talking to and interviewing Jobs for, you know, since the early 80s.
Right.
I mean, he has perspective that very few people, I think, in the industry have. And I love what he wrote. But he did mention, you know, at a particular point that Mike Moritz, who's now a very famous VC, who used to write for Time, did a profile on Steve and wound up naming, I think it was the Mac, was the person of the year when Steve
That's
was expecting
right.
it to be him. And ever since then, he'd felt like he'd been burned by journalism or journalists and had never really been able to shake that. I don't know if that's necessarily exactly. I mean, I assume that it is because I think Stephen would know better than anybody else.
Something happened.
But he never let that go.
Something happened because I, you know, as I said, I'd spent time socially with him. And later, you know, he recognized me, but he would never speak to me. And I was told Steve does not trust the press. He will not speak to you because he doesn't trust what you will write. And so something definitely happened at some point where he said, I know that most of these guys, maybe there's a few exceptions, maybe the Walt Mossbergs of the world I can trust. With Pogue, you know, the last interview Pogue had, David shared this with me. David was told not to ask certain questions. He did, and that was it. Boom, and never again. And, despite the fact that he's writing for the, you know, arguably one of the most prestigious outlets in the country.
You really can't trust the press.
If you go in and you read the...
You can't trust the press. They're not on your side.
Have you ever been quoted accurately?
They're not on your side.
I mean, it's like, you know, I've been a journalist.
Well, that's why I only do interviews with other media by email.
Exactly.
I won't do it by voice because I know how the system. It's not even that there's a malicious intent. It's just type something wrong, and all of a sudden,
Steve Jobs would get on the phone with a journalist with an agenda, saying, "I want to convey the following three things," and the lead would be something irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it's like to interact with the press.
That's normal. That's our job.
How it works.
And we're not your press agents.
So there's just no advantage for Steve to be always talking to people like you, Leo, who are going to be out there being journalists.
He's got very little to gain.
Exactly. But if you know,
and
he's
lots to
carefully
lose.
Chose the journalists, and they weren't the tech press. Never. He always cultivated the mainstream press.
Interesting.
If you go in and you read the Walt Mossberg piece, which was just really touching, even Mossberg at the beginning, when he talks about Steve calling him, he says, "I realized, you know, he was talking to a journalist and he had an agenda." And Steve knew that, and the journalists, hopefully, who talked to him knew that. And, you know, I still go back to this. I think a lot of what he did was very calculated, and he knew exactly what he was doing. And I think you see that in Apple's PR machine. I mean, I think Apple's PR machine really reflects Steve Jobs' attitude toward the press and kind of the way he wants to control and make sure that everything's done. And there are, you know, there are infamous stories about the PR group at Apple being vindictive and cutting people off because they don't write exactly what they want them to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've been victim to that. But, that's not really that interesting to me, at least not right now. I mean, we're all going to get back to that part of the world soon enough. I would just kind of prefer to reflect on why we have the emotional connection with these products that we do.
I love that topic. I think you're right.
Why we feel this way about someone?
Are there other products that we feel that way about? Are there other companies able to do products we feel that they speak to us in that way?
Not really very much in the consumer electronics world.
I think there's the Palm. There's the occasional,
you know, I would say
the Palm Pilot
did that for a while.
Mm, yeah.
There's a hierarchy of products that give you an emotional connection, and you use them as part of your identity, as a way to tell the world, you know, this is part of who I am,
or
I am the type of person who has a problem.
Well, I mean, that's part of the reason why my company exists. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, I'm very fascinated by how we build identity and emotional connections with our products, and that's why we built a site where you can build an identity around your products. And I don't say that to promote the site, but it's like I really feel very strongly about these being extensions.
It is true about cars. I would say that most often happens with an automobile, that people really identify so closely with their automobile that it you know, often they choose a car to say who they are.
For some people, clothes. But if you look at the top 20 or so most emotionally connective, if you can call it that, technology products, 12 to 15 of them are Apple products.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really
right now.
Right now.
But I think, I guess the point I was making is it's not unique, that it does happen.
No, there are some products. In the consumer electronics world, though, not very often.
Not as often as
we'd like. When it does happen in the consumer electronics world, I think it's oftentimes as a response to Apple. You know, I mean, you get a lot of people who look for
anti-Apple response.
Right, who look for products that are a strong alternative to an existing Apple product. And you know, the Zune kind of comes to mind as, that was a good product.
Yeah.
And I still hold it was a good product.
Nobody
but I think that what the Zune did better was galvanizing people who were sick of the iPod.
If they loved it. They loved it in opposition to the Apple.
That's another interesting part of this phenomenon, which is that there is serious passion around other products, but not among the mainstream. So there are people who are seriously passionate about the Palm devices, you know, the Pre. There's a lot of Android fanboys out there. Seriously passionate.
And there are BlackBerry. I'm telling you,
there
are people. Yes. You try to pry that BlackBerry out of their hands, and they will not give it up.
The Kindle, but you know, these are kind of niches of people.
Yeah.
Apple has a track record of having the great masses feeling really passionate about their devices. I mean,
is that true? Is it more than just us geeks?
Oh yeah,
real people feel
absolutely,
that way.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I think we can say definitively there are no smartphones that sell like the iPhone does. There are no portable media devices that sell like the iPod does. There are no tablets that sell like the iPad does. Nobody waits in line for any of these kinds of products. Period. It's just that's not disputable. So we know that like clearly there are enough people to get that kind of a response in you know the mainstream consumer audience, and that it's not even just that like a bunch of geeks line up outside the Apple store. It's all in the numbers.
Right.
I mean, you can just look at how many units ship and know very, very easily.
And the iPad is a really fascinating because it's going into areas that no other consumer electronic device has gone. 2-year-olds, 92-year-olds. You know, I mean, this is a really
The phenomenal. Last time I heard the story was the Wii. And, you know,
the Wii did that. Yeah. You're right.
But I also felt like the Wii was a fad from day one. And
the iPad may still be a fad. Well, I'm not convinced that it's not a fad. But you're right that normal people have an affinity for the iPad that...
You know, I don't think that it is a fad because I feel like it has, like, real utility.
I think it's the future of all computers. I think that they're going to... You can already see it in Lion. It's you know, our desktops are going to be a lot more like the iPad than they are like yesterday.
I look at Windows 8, I go... Oh.
No, but imagine really good... See, the thing with... Everybody's freaked out about on-screen keyboards, for example. Things like that. You know... Now that keyboards are software, they can follow Moore's law in terms of how awesome they are. But
Swipe's a good example. Swipe is so much better than anything else.
Combine, you know, you can use a real keyboard with an iPad. I'm using it right now.
I know, you crazy person.
With a big desktop.
Why don't you just get a laptop and get it over with? I don't understand why people do that.
But
I
imagine
really
if you
really seriously, Mike, why is that better than a laptop?
Than an 11-inch
Well, besides 12 hours battery life and stuff. Oh, like
that's
that.
The only reason.
No, I go back and forth.
I love. A light, thin laptop with a keyboard, so I don't have to carry it around.
You know, but imagine a really advanced version of Siri with a really advanced version of iOS with the power.
We don't have
of
to imagine it. John Sculley imagined it way back when with the Knowledge Navigator.
Yep.
At Apple Video, that's quite notorious. It was after Steve Jobs left, I think.
So why aren't other companies able to do this? And when they do, they end up coming off kind of tone deaf. I'm thinking of HP's The Computer is Personal Again, where they tried to make their laptops and desktops more warm and fuzzy. And you know, while HP sells a lot of desktop and notebooks, I don't think you think of HP's hardware as kind of, you know, as something in the same realm that you do as Apple's. Why can't other companies do that? What's missing?
Well, I think for starters, most other companies make commoditized hardware.
Yeah.
You know, it's always based on something else.
Apple stuff is kind of commoditized.
Well...
They own the stack, though, right? They own it from end to end, as we like to say in the industry.
Right.
You know, when you're buying an HP machine, you're buying yet another Windows machine. Right. At its core, you're buying a Windows. Like, what you're really buying is Windows and a piece of plastic to house it.
No, that's
Here's a fact that will, I think, surprise everybody who hears it for the first time. Apple has more than 1,000 people designing microprocessors.
This blew me away when I saw this on TechCrunch. I don't understand that.
And this gets to the key. Yesterday's New York Times actually nailed it.
It makes no sense because they're using an ARM processor.
But it's an Apple optimized ARM processor. They're also dealing with storage with chip based storage. But the Times yesterday had a paragraph in there that I think explains it, which is that to Steve Jobs' design. It wasn't something you slap on the outside of something. It wasn't window dressing. It wasn't decoration. It was from the very center. The elegance started from the center of the device, and it came outward through the software.
Well, as geeks, we love that.
And so, if you look at HP, it's a perfect example of a company that's
commodity
trying really
processors.
Hard to make computers personal again.
Right.
And what it's doing is it's taking a commodity thing and slapping a bunch of junk on top of it, and that's not what Apple does.
It stuns me that 1 in 20 Apple employees is working on processor design, or at least Apple non-retail employees is working
on look at the iPad. The iPad has weaker electronics than most of the Android competitors, and yet the performance is far better.
It's got 512 megs of RAM.
How do they do that? You know, they're really seriously. You know, it's kind of a black box. You don't hear about the people inside Apple doing what they do, but there's a lot of really brilliant people in there doing something because. You know, if you look at the performance of the iPad, just you touch the screen, instant response compared to many of the Android tablets. And there's a line somewhere where your brain says, okay, this doesn't feel real. This on this side of the line, it does feel like
I agree with you. I think that people looking at, say, the Android Zoom Android tablet and comparing it to the iPad, they may not have been able to quantify it, but it was that responsiveness, that just that feeling, and that came from this kind of underlying attention to detail that makes Apple unique. And it starts with the CPU. AT&T said they sold 200,000 iPhone 4Ss in the first 12 hours of pre-ordering. I can only imagine what Verizon and Sprint did. You don't have to announce a revolution. What that says is that people trust Apple.
Yeah.
That sight unseen, they're going to order this because it's the next thing, and Apple always delivers, right? Isn't that what that's saying?
Absolutely. I mean, by Apple scale, 200,000 doesn't seem like crazy.
That's a lot of phones.
If you look at any other cell phone company in the world, any of them, they would be so happy to have their best phone sell 200,000 units over the course of its lifetime.
Right.
So, I mean, 200,000 units is...
This was by noon.
Yeah. It's really...
And
it's,
just
it's
AT&T. Yeah, that was just AT&T. Yeah.
But also not surprising.
Well, they completely sold out of their first run of pre-order. So
right.
if you... You can pre-order now, and you'll get it in, like, 2013 or something.
That's incredible. It's just amazing.
When it is the free iPhone.
Right, that's right.
It makes me scratch my head. Now, I'm a very happy Samsung Galaxy S2 user. I love it. And I'm very intrigued by this Galaxy Prime. Now, this was, or the Samsung, whatever they're going to call it, Nexus Prime. Mm-hmm. So, Tuesday, they were at CTIA's going on in San Diego. Tuesday, and we all got invitations. Big announcement from Samsung and Google. And it even appeared on Google's Android channel, so I think it's pretty safe to say it was Ice Cream Sandwich that they were going to announce, running on a new Samsung handset, the long-rumored Galaxy Nexus Prime. We even saw a video of a very beautiful kind of curved thing. Then we got the email, I think it was Friday, saying, nope, it's off because it would be tasteless to announce a new product in the wake of Steve Jobs' death. That seems odd, given that Samsung and Apple are at each other's throats. Not much love between Samsung and Google either. What do you make of that? Is it really they thought it would be tasteless to announce it?
What's the acceptable time to wait? I mean, I don't. That did strike me as odd and almost a little self-serving. It's how long do you wait? I mean, if you have a product, you're in the pipeline. It's already been announced. I don't see why that would be offensive to the memory of Steve Jobs.
Well, this was the announcement. This wasn't actually the release. So, you know, I think they'll probably look at when they wanted to have it on the market.
That's the time to announce it, though, because you got all the journalists in San Diego for CTIA.
I mean, I do have to agree. It feels a little gauche.
It's bizarre
to do a product launch.
So you think that was tasteless, and that was a good thing, them putting off?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I do.
You know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. I think it's both. First of all, any news is being drowned out by Steve Jobs.
Still Tuesday?
So far.
I don't know. Have you looked at Tech Meme today? I mean, it's still it's just
not stopping. And the other thing is that it is tacky. And the third thing is, what are they going to say? They're going to say, this is way better than the iPhone.
That's probably it. Obviously, this presentation is already done.
Yeah.
And probably much of the presentation was at least backhanded, if not full frontal attacks on Apple.
That's right. And that's tasteless to do.
Yeah. All right.
So I think it was a good decision, I think.
Yeah. Look, they'll launch it. Nobody's going to go without the phone. If it's coming out for this holiday season, everybody's going to be able to get one. We know it's not going to sell out in the pre-order. Or maybe it is. But, I mean, it's not going to be influenced by their deciding not to launch or announce it this week.
Right. Do you think Sprint made a mistake, Brian, to spend $20 billion over 3 years buying iPhone 4Ss? They committed to that.
They had to do something. I think their bigger mistake was spending billions of dollars on WiMAX.
Yeah, that was a big
mistake. I think
that's a disappointment.
Comparably, the iPhone 4S deal is probably a lot better for them in the long run.
Yeah.
In fact, Sprint's stock is not doing too well right now.
You know why they were protesting T-Mobile and AT&T so much is because they wanted AT&T to buy them.
Yeah,
I have the secret conspiracy theory.
Makes sense.
They're in bad.
Well, and the other reason being that if it is suddenly AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, they're the weakest link, right? Mm-hmm. They're dead meat. They're history. They you can't compete against those two mammoth.
They're already kind of.
Which is why I think that one of the reasons the Department of Justice, in fact, said maybe we better block this. It's not the going from four to three that we're worried about. It's going from four to two that we're really worried about.
You know, Sprint's fate is. I mean, it sealed its own fate. The Nextel deal was stupid. We knew it then. We know it now. They blew it. It's even that it was a dumb deal. They blew it, too.
They bought a technology at the end of its life.
Yes. Not as Apple says in the spring, which is when they like to do it. Nextel was a huge, huge investment for them. I mean, it was so much so that, you know, it could have just completely put them out of business if it had gone worse. Then they did WiMAX, which was, you know, impossibly stupid when we could all see that the world is heading towards LTE. You know, they need something. If they go out of business, nobody's going to say, like, oh, well, you know, the circumstances and this and that. I mean, they put themselves in this position.
I do love my, I have to say, the phone I carry right now is a Sprint Epic 4G Touch, and I love it. But it's that Galaxy S2 platform, which is, I think, beautiful. Yeah. But this is the problem with Android, because I just bought it. Now they got the Prime, for crying out loud. An ice cream sandwich, for crying out loud. I'm just getting, you know, you cannot keep up. You can keep up. You probably don't have to worry about those things.
Well, yeah, because
if
AT&T and T-Mobile is blocked, does Sprint survive or not? Or how much longer does Sprint have?
We do keep hearing rumors that Google, Apple, somebody will buy Sprint.
Definitely not Apple.
Yeah. I would love to see Google buy Sprint.
It's possible.
Then they'd have Motorola and Sprint.
It feels a lot more likely now that Google's bought Motorola, which I think, you know, 6 months ago we all would have said no way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Who knows?
It's intriguing. Sony is apparently, according to All Things D, nearing a deal to buy out Ericsson. Sony Ericsson is a 50-50 joint venture. Ericsson was, of course, a cell phone company. Sony, I don't know what. And maybe they're going to get into the cell phone business, or they want to incorporate, it says, the smartphone business into the tablet, handheld game, and personal computer business. What do you think?
I think it's fascinating to see Silicon Valley just destroying everybody.
Bravo!
Remember when the center of the handset universe was Finland, Canada,
Ericsson, Nokia,
and so on, and Apple and Google are just clobbering everybody. And this kind of news is you know, just what you do. What do you do? How do you deal with the Android versus iPhone wars? You know, you do whatever you can, but it's just a
struggle.
Really interesting phenomenon to see Silicon Valley of all places.
We're number one.
Yeah.
We're number one.
If I remember correctly, Ericsson had a very similar pattern that Nokia's had over the years, where Ericsson, you know, used to have kind of two big parts of his business. One is the infrastructure business, you know, towers, radios, all the things that kind of make the infrastructure side work, which is actually kind of the more lucrative side. And that's why the Sony Ericsson handset business came to exist, so they did the JV with the handset part of their business. So it really doesn't surprise me that they want to be spinning that out. I think Nokia got rid of their infrastructure business.
Get out of the carrier business, just make handsets, and Sony's a handset company and everything else, hardware.
Although I don't know what Sony thinks it's doing. I mean, they've proven level of expertise at this point.
You're right. You're right. Let's take a break, come back with more. I want to talk about what Microsoft is up to. Believe it or not, Microsoft actually has some news. Well, they had, you know, this Windows 8, they have Mango is coming out, and now Xbox TV. I don't know. We'll find out. Before we do, though, let's talk about Audible.com. I am sure they will have the Jobs biography on Audible. I hope they do. They were talking in the chat room about it. I wonder who's reading it and all of that.
I think it should be you, Leo.
You know what? I would do it pro bono if they'd let me. I would do it for free. I would do it tomorrow if they don't have Hey, Audible. If you don't have anybody, I'd like to do it. No, of course. Wouldn't that be a great book to read out loud? I don't care if it's 1,000 pages. They do have a lot of Steve Jobs books, almost all of them, available on Audible.com. If you're interested in reading Icon or even some of the older Steve Jobs books. In fact, those are even perhaps more interesting. There's one we had talked about. Let me see if I can find it. That was... There it is. The Return to the Little Kingdom. No, that's not. That's the Michael Moritz book. Alan Deutschman's The Second Coming of Steve Jobs. Of course, there's Jeffrey Young's Icon. It seems like there was an older one. Maybe that is The Return to the Little Kingdom. I mean, no, that's not it. There it is. The Second Coming of Steve Jobs. That was it. This came out in 2000. Is an earlier book about Steve Jobs, and a very interesting read. There's some great stuff on Audible. If you're interested in reading about technology, history, classics, business, sci-fi. They're wonderful. Audible is 75,000 great books, and one of them is waiting for you. Actually, let's make it two of them is waiting for you. Two of them are waiting for you. Right now, if you go to audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum account. Now, that's two books a month. Your first month's free. Your first two books are free. I envy you. The only thing I don't envy is, oh, look at all this great stuff. How do you pick just two? But if you've not used Audible yet, you're in for a great treat. The thing about Audible is you get to read those times when you couldn't read, on your commute, when you're cleaning the house, on the Stairmaster, on the treadmill. Audible, or William Shatner, your key to understanding the Shatnerverse. And the world, listen to this. This is another thing I love about the Audible page. You can hear excerpts of the book, and I do encourage you to do that, to hear the narrators. William Shatner narrates this one.
Actors love to have their name above the title, but my name was in the title. How could I turn that down? Rule, always be yourself, especially if yourself has a high Q rating and is pleasing to a wide variety of advertisers.
You know, if you love Shatner, how can you not listen to this? Oh, my goodness. I don't know how you're going to choose two books, but choose you must, little Padawan learner. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up today. I'm telling you, you will thank me for it. If you're not already an Audible member, you will thank me for it. Plays on, of course, all the devices. Not the newest Kindle. I was so disappointed. I got the $79 Kindle. No audio. But on the keyboard Kindles and, of course, the Kindle Fire, Audible will play just fine. In fact, it's really nicely integrated into the Kindle software because you see your Amazon book library and you can download it, but you also see all the Audible books you've ever bought, and you can listen to them at any time, and I love that. Audible.com/twit2. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. They're one of our earliest, longest supporters, and we love them. Michael Lewis has a new book. I didn't see that. Boomerang Travels in the New Third World. Love Michael Lewis. What was I going to talk about next?
Microsoft.
Xbox TV. We talked about this a little on Windows Weekly, and no one seems to know. But it sounds like Microsoft's making an IPTV play. They want to turn the Xbox 360 into a set-top box.
You know, if they throw Kinect in there and I can change the channel by waving my arms.
Did you see the video? They do. You talk to your TV. This is what you were talking about. You talk to your TV. Here's the video. What is the future of the living room? You could turn on his audio.
It's like 1,000 channels. When suddenly you've taken all that and now millions of new pieces of content all flowing into the living room. The real problem that we have today is the technology is kind of in your way. It's hard to find what you want to do. I mean, when you're in there, you really just want to find something to watch or you want to...
Is this the new one? Because the new one uses... Yeah, there's the Kinect guys.
Think about how that should work.
So you can wave at it like Minority Report. You can say, what's on tonight?
Imagine what you might want to do.
Talk to your TV.
I want to be able to program my own gestures.
Yes, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, flip off Jersey Shore and it never shows.
Flip them off! How great would that be? You know what? You could turn the audio down and keep showing the video on this. But you know what? Thank you, Eileen. But you know what I think is interesting is they're making content deals with cable companies, but also Hulu, with all of the players.
But see, I think we're going to have two sides in this war. They're going to be the side where it's the replacement for cable model.
Right.
And the ones that, like this, that are the saviors of the cable model. And
can it be both at the same time?
I hope not.
Does both. It's kind of there's Netflix in it, and Hulu is in it.
It kind of looks like it. They want to play both sides.
Yeah.
Could you unplug and plug in again? We're getting the silent. It must be 1 hour into the show.
You know, so Microsoft actually announced its first IPTV deals on the Xbox in 2007 at CES. I remember this.
And, that's right.
It was all in Europe, and they all tend to be with providers who have infrastructure that's not cable. So it's like, you know, we can do like, you know, fiber, we can do, you know, high speed DSL, stuff like that, where they can get a really high speed pipe to your house, enough to deliver IPTV, but they maybe don't actually have dedicated cable infrastructure. So I think we've still kind of yet to see this really come into play, here, but you know, the stuff like HBO Go, I mean, that's to me very, very exciting.
Feel like Microsoft's doing both. They want to be a set top box for cable, and they want to be a cord cutter box.
You know, the problem is they are hamstrung by the cable companies, right. by the they're hamstrung by everybody, and they're just trying to get a beachhead into this thing, right? Like, the Xbox is their beachhead, and it's done a really good job, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're always going to be hamstrung by, you know, Comcast or whomever who doesn't want to see them basically replace their cable set-top box business. That makes a lot of money for them. Mm-hmm.
Ryan, there's a caveat to that, and that is that they have a good relationship with Comcast because their software, not Comcast, with UVerse, with AT&T UVerse, because their software runs those boxes. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of have a foot in that business, and they know players, and they have relationships.
Interesting. So I think, Mike, in fact, you'll be able to – it'll know – because, you know, one thing Kinect does is it knows you, right?
Yeah, right.
So it sees you sit down. And it goes, oh, mm-hmm. Mike, I know what you like to watch.
Exactly.
And we've got some strippers on for you right now.
And I've got,
whatever. That would be me.
I'm sorry. I'm a little more technical than my wife, so I think I could – sort of tell when she's not around. I could tell, you know, okay, pay attention to my gestures, you know. No more vampire shows.
Yeah, right. Turn off the Twilight now. Interesting. Unfortunately, Microsoft, Paul and I had some fun with this, Paul and Mary Jo and I on Windows Weekly on Thursday, has not announced a name, a price, availability, or anything. So... But I am looking forward to saying, turn on the strippers, and having my TV respond.
Sounds like a name of one of your shows.
I think we already have this.
Turn on the strippers.
No, let's be tasteful.
This is for you, Ryan, and you and Veronica might want to look at this on Craigslist. Now casting Silicon Valley reality show.
Nope.
Major cable network now casting confident professionals with big personalities for a new reality show. Are you a young, successful professional living in America's most emerging area?
That's a most emerging.
Most
area?
Emerging.
What does that even mean?
We are most emerging. Okay, that's
sounds
it.
Like far
yeah, I really want to work with some illiterate producers.
But I think actually that's the beauty of reality TV. They're unscripted, right? We don't know who this is. But I think that you might want to think about it.
I just find it so strange. You know, it's really antithetical, I think, to the personality of the Bay Area, which is a lot of people who use technology to tell their own story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes no sense. I think it's gross. Yeah. I hope they go away.
I think all reality TV is gross, and I hope it all goes away.
Yeah, seriously.
There's Jersey Shore. They should call this Attention Whore. How about that?
Attention Whore. I like it. Yeah. You know, we could do that. Twit could do that. That's all right, I'm going to admit show. It. We put the ad in the paper. Right. What am I going to say?
This week in attention whoring.
Let's find out what's coming up this week. Tom Merritt is in the TNT newsroom. Of course, we do TNT every Monday through Friday, 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. Your daily dose of tech news. Mike. No, you're Mike.
Do I have to do the news?
No, you don't have to do it. Tom. You do it.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at what's coming up in the week ahead that we'll be keeping an eye on for tech news today. Monday, October 10th, Google will officially announce the Dart programming language at a conference in Denmark. Also, the HTC Amaze and Samsung Galaxy S2 will be available from T-Mobile online. Tuesday, October 11th, begins CTIA Enterprise down in San Diego. We were expecting a Samsung Android announcement.
That
has since been canceled. Wednesday, October 12th, the HTC Amaze and Samsung Galaxy S2 are available from T-Mobile in stores. And that's the day iOS 5 launches. You'll be able to download it for your iPad and iPhone. Thursday, October 13th is the deadline for Samsung to fix the Samsung Galaxy or stop selling it in the Netherlands. Also, the Motorola Zoom 4G LTE new tablets go on sale. And Oneirik Ocelot from Ubuntu arrives. Friday, October 14th is Pacificon 2011, the amateur radio convention happening down in Santa Clara. Leo's going to be there on Sunday to do the tech guy. And Friday is when the iPhone 4S officially goes on sale and ships to those who pre-ordered it. Saturday, October 15th, the PlayStation Vita pre-orders start if you're in Japan. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Okay, everybody, who's going to go online at midnight to order the PlayStation Vita? Really, Dwight?
No.
Veronica said, ow. She did a little ow. Little Oprah moment there. All right, I don't. It doesn't. Does it excite you?
Everyone here should look under their seat.
And if you find anything, let me know.
Gum.
What will make you happy is there actually is not a Vita under there.
Yeah, so right. Stan Boom. Locke asks in the chat room, why does Leo hate Sony? I don't hate Sony. I don't even know Sony. Sony did really own the consumer electronics market at one point and just fumbled the future.
They didn't just own it. They were it.
They were it.
I mean, 50s and 60s?
What happened?
You know, they've actually come out with some pretty cool stuff, but it's always double the price that anybody's willing to pay. I mean, they've...
Well, it doesn't stop Apple.
Apple isn't... I mean, Apple's a little more expensive, but, I mean, if you think about their netbook, I think, was started at $900 and went up to...
That silly... The long thing. Rectangular thing. That was bizarre. It was just bizarre.
It was... But if it would have been $400, I would have bought it for sure. I mean, it was like... It was pretty solid. It was good. You know, it's interesting. It was, you know...
What were those little discs, the mini discs?
UMD.
UMD.
No, UMD is a really good example.
PSP thing.
Of why Sony has not made it to this era. Not to keep bringing it back to Apple, but there was one thing that they kept kind of talking about that Tim kept bringing up in the Apple keynote last week, and that was Apple is the only company that successfully marries all of these products and design and, you know, integration across all of their products all the time. Nobody else can really say that. Sony definitely can't say that. I mean, when is the last time that you saw a Sony machine that could do anything with, say, a PSP or with your PS3? Or, you know, what does your PS3 do with your Sony HDTV that's any different from any other HD? I mean, you know, they make everything, and yet none of that stuff is coherent together.
Right.
And we could talk about like the quality, individual quality of some of those products. I mean, they do make some really good products, but you know, as a company, they just, it's a Hydra, you know, and they have so
many.
They
do one thing I love so much, and that's that Core TV show. I think that's such a great show. Don't flip me off. I'm saying something nice. Oh, she's doing that. I'm sorry.
Why is there a camera over there? Yeah, I don't know. Do you have another camera?
I'm just teasing. I'm just kidding you. Veronica Belmont is in the house. I don't know why we don't have a camera on her, of all things. You're looking at these guys instead of Veronica. So the internet, one more story, and then we'll wrap this sucker up so you guys could get out of here. The internet population in 2004 was 800 million people. That's how many people are on Facebook 7 years later, alone. That's just kind of scary.
Somebody's got to do something about that.
It's just scary. There are now roughly 2 billion people on the internet. But that means Facebook is, you know, more than a third of all the people on the internet.
Yeah.
That's just bizarre. And, in fact, remember Mark Zuckerberg at F8 said, and I still don't think this could possibly be true, that they had 500 million people use Facebook in one day.
Yeah.
Could that possibly be true? A quarter of the entire 1 in 4 internet users in the whole world were on Facebook in one day?
I mean, those are probably uniques. And if, you know, a lot of people check on their phone, then they go home and they check on their work computer and then their home computer, and they might be counting that.
I think he said uniques. I think he said 500 million uniques.
Unique logins.
Oh.
I think they mean individual. I mean, they know when I log in from my phone that it's Ryan Block, and when I log in from my computer, it's Ryan
Block.
They know
more than that, percentage of the total number.
They know more than that.
That's huge.
It's amazing.
It's a lot.
It's kind of hard.
I don't really doubt that. Honestly, I mean, Facebook
use it every day.
Facebook is,
Nobel Peace Prize for Mark Zuckerberg?
No. I really hope not.
Come on.
That would be funny.
Come on. He was the man of the year in 2010. On Wednesday, Thor Bjorn Jagland, chairman of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, said, "For me and the committee, it's quite obvious if you look at the world today and see what is happening out there, what are the major forces pushing the world in the right direction? Mark Zuckerberg." I don't think he actually said Mark Zuckerberg, but the implication was. National Review writer Jay Norlinger, who has a book on the history of the Nobel Peace Prize coming out this March, said, "It is possible Zuckerberg could win the Nobel Peace Prize."
It just seems to me like to credit Zuckerberg, I mean...
with anything.
You know, well, I mean, he's created something amazing, but it's, you know... It seems like you're forgetting that it's actually the real invention of note. The thing that's actually important here is the internet and the web.
The internet.
That's what's that's the real important thing here, and that there's going to be connective tissue always. And you know, I'm actually kind of surprised it's taken so long for one company to accumulate so much of that in one place. But you know, there's always going to be something that connects people. It's really the technology that underlies it.
He has united the world in opposition to Facebook privacy policy. So maybe.
Yeah, I think, you point at the Arab Spring, which was a Facebook revolution in Egypt. I mean,
does Vint Cerf get the Nobel Peace Prize? Maybe. Is that who should get it? Yeah.
I would love to see him get the Nobel Peace Prize.
That would be great.
Yeah. I actually think that would be completely justified, and then some.
Well, let's nominate him.
The nominations are done. There were 241 nominations they'll announce. I thought they were going to announce already, but I guess they'll announce this
week. They announced it last week. It was three women from Africa.
Oh, so it's done. So Mark can't win. Well, never mind. I was going to get everybody to lobby and everything. I mean, they actually, people who actually did something to promote peace?
Yes. Wow. Real peace. Wow.
Crazy. I think, in all seriousness, I think you could say that in many ways, the internet and Facebook specifically is a very big force for understanding, communication, which ultimately leads to peace. Absolutely.
But, if peace breaks out between Israel and the Palestinians, you don't give it to the phone company.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's, yeah, you're right. Meg Whitman says she will decide the future of HP's PC business this month. I thought it was already decided.
Yeah, I thought that she said it was done, that they're following through. Mm-mm.
She said that they were going to make a decision this month. She has said, or actually Ray Lane said, that they would not sell it. So it's either to...
Raise the chairman of the board.
Right. And he said they will not sell it, but they may spin it off or they may end up keeping it. I was out last week at the old Compaq campus. HP was doing an event showing off how they build and design their business computers. And there was some speculation at the time, off the record and not from anybody I could talk about, that the people who are out there are hoping that if they spin it off, 70% of the employees who work for the Personal Systems Group are at the Houston campus, and that they would essentially, if they spun it off, it would be based in Houston.
Wow.
And it would be the rebirth of Compaq, essentially, because that's a lot of the people who are there.
Well, I'm sure you'll be following interest.
I think they should spin it off because I think it will give them more agility and make them more make them a better competitor. I think right now they're just kind of buried under the weight of HP's bureaucracy. And
they should call it Compaq.
Maybe they should also go and spin out Palm, too.
Well, there's something that really bugs
buy
me.
Buy it, I'm going to ruin it, and I'm going to spin it back out.
This is the history of Palm, actually. It's happened many, many times.
Yeah, before. It has. It's really
so sad. It's a sad story.
It's horrible.
Tell it.
But there's something that really bugs me about that whole Palm thing, and it's this. Remember that scene in Pirates of Silicon Valley where Steve Wozniak takes the wooden Apple One
to HP.
The suits at HP.
Yep.
They have the future in their hands. They own it already.
Yep.
And they don't recognize it for what it is. Mm-hmm. Is if the future is multi-touch user interfaces, HP already owns a really good one, and are they doing that again? Are Amazing. They? Do they own the
and
future?
And it's not commodity.
Exactly.
Which is actually the more important part. It's not another Android
That's
break.
Right. They could do so much with WebOS. So much.
It's a great OS.
Yeah, we'll get rid of it.
Yeah, they blew it. They totally. And here's the other reality that I think most of the people who are really, really entrenched in this stuff have kind of come to accept over the last couple weeks is that this time Palm is down for the count. They are not coming
back.
Yep. They're not coming back. I would be stunned.
I'm very happy to say I just bought a graffiti app for my Android that replaces the keyboard with graffiti. So now, if you're a Palm nostalgist, you can go once again. And if you know what I spelled, you email me. We are done for the day. I want to thank you, Dwight Silverman, for joining us. Dwight, of course, writes for the Houston Chronicle. He's at blog.cron.com/techblog. Also hosts a great show on the Houston Pacifica outlet. Tell us about that.
It's Technology Bites. It's on Wednesday nights from 8 to 10 Central Time. And it's five guys answering computer questions and being nerds.
It's really, I'm not kidding.
So
it's
brave.
Really a fun
it's
show.
So brave to answer commuter questions live.
It's so fun. I love that show. Ask me back, Dwight.
I'd
love
to
do it again. Yeah. It's really, really fun. Mike Elgin, I guess we just say Google Plus. Adam on Google Plus.
I'm on Google Plus.
He lives there now. He, of course, has a great newsletter, which is free and everybody should subscribe to.
You can subscribe on my Google Plus profile. All my blogging, everything that I do is on Google Plus now, so it's much easier.
He says he's the world's only lovable technology writer. Isn't that sweet?
No offense, Ryan.
And he's been posting, apparently, even as we're doing this show.
Yes.
Did you take that with your iPad?
iPhone.
Oh, your iPhone.
Yeah.
That's very sneaky.
I'm already dissatisfied with it because it's not the iPhone 4S.
See, if you only had the 4S. Thank you, Mike, for being here. GDGT.com is the place to find Ryan Block, a great site for people who want to talk about gadgets. You do great events. You have gadget news. You own the verb want, have, and had. So stay away, Mark Zuckerberg. Those are his verbs.
I just tweeted a couple links from Steve that I mentioned or alluded to before. One is actually a really great thread about people's Steve stories.
You know,
just from top to bottom. This actually I posted a while ago when he retired. Maybe it was a little premature. And then the other is that one that I mentioned earlier about living in Steve's house.
So twitter.com/...
Ryan.
Ryan. You just Ryan.
Just Ryan.
Just the word Ryan is all we need.
You don't have at Leo?
No. Somebody has
Leo. We should get that for you.
I don't know if I want Leo.
You're going to get a lot of Twitter spam, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you get a lot of Ryan spam?
Yeah, a lot of people...
think you're Ryan tweeting. Gosling? Yeah. Ryan...
Gosling.
That other Ryan.
Some footballers. It's just crazy.
Hmm. Good. Living in Steve's house and stories of Steve at gdgt.com. Do you ever have sunglasses like that, Ryan?
Sunglasses? Oh, yeah. No, they're over there.
That's real?
I can go grab them.
That's how you look?
I'm going to bring those over.
Large.
Who did that? Who did that avatar?
Oh, a friend of mine drew that of me a few years ago.
Scary.
It's even scarier big. Big-ass glasses.
Scary.
It looks about right.
Thank you all for being here. Don't forget, you can get your daily dose of tech news every Monday through Friday with Tech News Today, TNT, with Tom Merritt, Iaz Akhtar, and the great Sarah Lane. That's at 2:30 p.m. Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, Monday through Friday at twit.tv. This show is Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 2200 UTC. Please tune in live, but if you can't, you can always download it after the fact. In fact, do both. Why not? That way, you know, it's flexible that way. You'll find Twit at twit.tv, iTunes, the Zune Marketplace, and anywhere finer podcasts are distributed. Anything else that I should say or plug?
Just that Twit will be late next week.
Ah, yes. Thank you. Yeah, we'll be doing the radio show, as Tom said, from Pacificon, the ham conference in Santa Clara. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., which means that I will have to
drive back,
race back. Fight off hams. You know, I didn't know this about hams. They can be kind of chatty. They like to
Okay, so I should schedule it for...
This from someone who talks for a living.
They like to talk more than me. And so what I'm just going to do is I'm going to go like this, and I'm going to run out the door there, because if I can get here at 4, we'll do the show at 4. But as soon as I get back, we'll do the show.
We're estimating 4:30.
Really? Yeah. Knowing me. Yeah, probably 4:30. Eileen Rivera is our producer, does a great job. She doesn't just produce the show. Ladies and gentlemen, she runs the board, and I don't know how she does all of that. Look at that. Wow!
So fantastic.
Wow, she can push all the buttons at the same time. She is also the host of a great Android show we do called All About Android. That's on every Monday at...
Monday at 5 p.m. We'll be live from Android Open, O'Reilly conference tomorrow.
Oh, that's cool. And we were going to broadcast live the Samsung announcement, but since they're not doing it, you canceled your tickets to San Diego. Huh?
I did. I actually rerouted myself to Vegas for CES.
Oh, you'll be there a little early, but okay.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to San Diego, and I'll just go anyway. What the hell? I'm not canceling my tickets. I'll be gone this week. We have great people filling in for me all week long, but I'll be back on Saturday. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.